Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Officially proclaimed one of America's great streets by the American Planning Association, the Del Mar Loop in University City is clearly one of the most vibrant parts of our region. It didn't happen overnight. Its history is rich in the people, places, and things that have made the Loop area what it is today, the spot for good food, entertainment, and cultural amenities. Much of the credit for what's been happening most recently goes to Joe Edwards, the unofficial mayor of the Loop. His contributions include Blueberry Hill, the Pageant, Moonrise Hotel, the Walk of Fame, and more. He's with us on today's program, along with Mary Costanton, author of a new book titled St. Louis's Del Mar Loop. It shows us in photos and text how the Loop evolved into what it is today. I thank you both so much for being with us today. Mary, I'll start with you. Congratulations on the book, by the way. It's a lot of fun, I'm sure, bringing back a lot of memories to folks who grew up here and even those who didn't. But, you know, the title of the book, St. Louis's Del Mar Loop, tells me that the Loop belongs to more than just University City.
Yes, that's the truth. Yeah. For a long time, the section of Del Mar east of Skinker was sort of no man's land. Joe has sort of taken care of that situation. But it is a destination, and it has been a destination in the past as well. In the 30s and early 40s, it was a high-end fashion street, both for men, women, and children, for all every member of the family. The uptown convenience, downtown service was the motto of one of the variety stores there, department stores. That sold to all members of the family. My favorite, though, destination, I think, is on the cover of the book, and that was the 5 and 10.
Kresge's.
Kresge's at Del Mar and Heman, which is right in University City, because that had literally everything, and people went there for that. But the trolleys, the Loop was a place where many trolley lines came and people could transfer from one line to the next to get wherever they were going. And, of course, when they had to wait for a trolley, they shopped. And that was the lifeblood of the Loop for a long time. That went away, however.
Yeah. Joe, and obviously you've made it your mission to continue that notion that the Loop belongs not only to the people of the neighborhood area but to the entire community around St. Louis.
Yeah, it's real exciting because the Loop had seen its better days, as Mary said, and had gone downhill, particularly after World War II and mainly in the 60s when there was great flight away, as happened in other parts of the country. It wasn't unique here, but to slowly bring it back, it took owner-operators of businesses who would pour their life savings and their hearts and souls into their small businesses, and they would stay there through thick and thin. In fact, chain restaurants and stores were not interested in coming in the Loop. And that's a lucky thing, really, because it little by little it built up slowly. So it's a real solid buildup. Even though we did feel the Great Recession, the Loop survived better than just about any other street in the Midwest, and now is thriving. And there are a lot of new, really good businesses that have opened recently, so it continues. And I think when Mary writes another book 50 years from now to follow up on this, she'll find a lot more pictures to add.
In many ways, it is kind of a throwback, is it not? I mean, that neighborhood now, because of the small businesses and the fact that it looks a lot like what America, much of America, looked like 50, 60, 70 years ago.
A lot of pedestrians, which is not the case in on many streets, even streets with a lot of stores, because people have gotten used to enclosed malls and that sort of thing. So to walk out on Del Mar, say at lunchtime any weekday, the sidewalks are just filled with people, and there are good places to eat, and not everything is, you know, high-end, expensive places to eat either. It's a wonderful variety of people.
I was just going to say, it's not only just people. It's a great diversity of people,
right,
which always adds a lot of flavor and spice to any kind of a neighborhood. One of the things that I noticed, and you've got about, maybe 150, 200 pictures in your book. It's wonderful to look at some of these photographs. But I was taken by the names of some of the shops and stores.
Mm-hmm.
It was so simple, as it remains today in many ways, but a shoe store called simply Shoeland.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, what else? reliable fur. not very complicated. And the Hat Mart. It just struck me as is kind of nice and kind of simple, reflecting a much simpler time. Mary, what got you into this?
This book is published by Arcadia Publishing, whose mission in life is to publish books about neighborhoods or towns to keep history alive or not let it die. And my son lives about an hour south of San Francisco in a town that was once five towns. So, of course, I came across these and I began to send him I have vowed not to send him any more books. These books, and he said to me one day, "Why don't you ever thought about doing something from the Loop?" And so I pitched it, and they took it. And first thing they asked me, my editor said, "My ex-sister-in-law lives in St. Louis. Can you get Joe Edwards to write the foreword?"
Which you did.
Which I did.
Which you did. Joe, a mission for you to write that. How complicated was that for you?
Well, it was a joy. I mean, when I heard what Mary was planning, I was real excited because I'd seen many photographs and read a lot about the Loop through the decades, but no one has curated anything like this before, and it's just magnificent. I mean, so many of these photos I have never seen. They're so evocative of a different time. When you see open-air swimming pools, open-air movie theaters, roller coasters in the Loop, I mean, it's amazing. What she has dug up from who knows where.
That surprised me, not being a native of this area. I've been here a long time, but I had no idea that there was an amusement park out there at one time.
Del Mar Guy.
There is a tunnel under the street that I know that you've been asked about most recently by people who kind of remember it, but maybe don't. A lot of things going on that most people don't know about.
Well, the tunnels, there was one from Del Mar, from the near the intersection of Kingsland and Del Mar, and another tunnel at Kingsland, on Kingsland next to near that intersection, for kids to go to school and not get run over, because the intersection of Kingsland and Del Mar was horrifying. Many streets came into it, and there was no traffic light, so it was sort of, Katie barred the door. You took it. So I don't know if those tunnels have been filled in or not. They were closed off in a while. But I wanted to say one of the reasons I agreed to do the book was because I knew that Sue Rakoff, the archivist for the University City Public Library and the Historical Society, had, as a result of getting a grant, put about 200 old photos online, and that's, I knew that I had a source right there, and that source is open to everybody. Just go to the U City Public Library main page and you'll get it.
Well, so assembling these photos was a lot easier than some might otherwise have expected.
Because, right. Yeah. Right. I was able to, Sue made it possible for me to download them onto my own computer, but keeping the one task was keeping the continuity straight in my head. So when I finished the book, I had a stack of plans that plan number 178 that I had to just get rid of. But I encourage people to go to the U City Library webpage to look at these pictures, because I had to leave out a lot. I mean, Joe said in 50 years, I could do another one in 10 years because there are lots of pictures still.
But, it's like making a movie. No one ever knows what's left on the cutting room floor.
That's right.
But
that's
they're
right.
Still there and they still could be used. Yeah. Joe, why would this book, do you think, or the history of the Loop, appeal to people who aren't from this immediate area?
Well, I think people that have moved in over the last decade have seen such change that if they see this book, they can start looking at different buildings. Oh, this store, this restaurant is in this building now, but oh, look what it used to look like. And the fact that the building is still there and architecturally significant in a lot of cases, most cases, I think historically it'll be of interest to them. And then as they see a new business move in and the sign changes, the facade, it's just living history, really. And as you said earlier, I think they'll want to walk up and down the Loop, and because it's such a wonderful pedestrian area. The sight lines from one building to the next are there, and with this new Washington University project filling in yet another hole in the streetscape, it's going to be magnificent. going forward, too.
We tend to think of the Loop as belonging just to University City, but it actually has spread out a little bit to the east anyway.
It is. It's literally half in the county or U City and half in the city of St. Louis now. The 6,000 block up to the 6,600 block is the pedestrian-oriented Loop. And what's wonderful is, due to all the pedestrians, it's made the area one of the safest city streets in all the Midwest. Crime rates at a 40-year low because of it. There are new security cameras and all, too, but it's just all those people enjoying the Loop again. It's only when you don't have a lot of people on the sidewalk that it becomes tricky in the city.
Sure, and yet from time to time, and I guess within the last year or so, there have been reports of some issues regarding kids and bands of kids.
Flash mobs.
Yeah, and that has been a problem for you. I'm sure it's a concern to you.
It is, although it was really addressed beautifully by the city police of 7th District and the University City Police and even the Washington University Police. So we've had a very, very peaceful couple of years. There was one incident, a two-hour period a year ago, March 31st, and it was not a good time that lasted about 2 hours. But the TV media just played that over and over and over as if it was happening every night, which was very exasperating because it really hurt the image of the area and was really not a fair way to report. The print media was very fair, I thought. It was just, you know, reported as fact. But if people would come down today, for one thing, they're over $200,000 worth of real high-quality cameras now in the Loop. I mean, so high quality you can zoom in on a license plate or a person's face, and people don't want to risk doing something really silly and then ending, you know, their weekend in the clinker or whatever. But so it's really been incredibly calm, and I would entice or invite everyone to come back, even if they don't want to come back right away on a Saturday night. They should come, which is fine and safe, but they can come back in the daytime and see the improvements to the Loop, and I think they would feel comfort again. And we can't give up areas like this. It's important that we you know, go to the different shops and shop and the restaurants and shop to not give in, and that's what we've done in the Loop. Every decade, there's always a little problem, and we solve it, and we're solving this one right now. So I'm very happy.
I sometimes wonder if the TV stations, and they're not the only culprits involved in this, realize what they're doing when they put so much emphasis on crime news, as they do night after night, whether it's University City or the city of St. Louis. They tend to drive people away. It hurts business. A bad weather forecast, for instance, about a snowstorm that never happens can keep people from going to restaurants and that sort of thing.
Oh, and it does. And they know exactly what they're doing. They're keeping their ratings up so they keep their jobs. There's a big snowstorm. Well, it's 200 miles north of us. And, you know, if our weather's going to be good, it's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, but I don't think it's very well thought out. And having been a part of that for a long time myself, I know how it works. Mm-hmm. But I'll take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking with Mary Constantin, who is the author of the book I have in front of me here, St. Louis's Del Mar Loop, and that's what we're talking about. Also with us is Joe Edwards, the man who has done so much to rejuvenate that area. We'll come back, continue our conversation, and, of course, we want to make you a part of it. You can reach us by phone at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can also send us a tweet at STL on Air. We would love to hear from you. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Radio 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation about the Loop in University City and a small portion of St. Louis City. My guests in studio are Mary Constantin, author of the new book titled St. Louis's Del Mar Loop. Joe Edwards is with us. Everyone, I think, knows Joe Edwards. Joe Edwards has done so much for that community. Mary, I'd like to go back a little bit in time, give folks a taste of what things were like before Joe and before a lot of things were happening in the Loop. I was struck by the role played by Edward Gardner Lewis a century ago. Quite a guy, and he really got the ball rolling, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He was a very flamboyant character and along the way got into trouble with managing other people's funds, but he had terrific ideas. He had a magazine publishing business downtown that he needed to move because it was cramped. The quarters were cramped. So he went straight out to the Del Mar, basically, to a mile beyond, and he said, "This is the place. The trolley lines are here. World's Fair, this is 1902, the World's Fair is going to be here in a couple of years. Washington University is moving here. This is where we're going to have our magazine empire." and he hired an architect to build the most remarkable building I think I have ever seen on a city street, the octagonal 170-foot tall U-City, now U-City Hall, with a big searchlight in his dome. And the idea of the searchlight was to attract visitors from the World's Fair. But he, the reason he was in the magazine business was because it made money. Rural free delivery had just happened. Most people still lived on farms, and so he was able to mail the women's magazines. He was interested. He was a bit of a suffragist. I'm not. His wife was more than he, I think, but he was very supportive of women, and he had this idea of having a university attached to some of the magazines. And he never missed an opportunity to. In the book, there's a photograph of a trolley car which he had decked out and named after his wife, Mabel, that had leather fittings inside and was wonderful, had tea trays. It never went anywhere. It was just on view at the World's Fair. But he had lots of visitors come. He also, at the same time, built where now the it used to be the Anchor Temple, a tent city for visitors to the fair. So he always had a deal going. He wanted to start a bank, and the Attorney General of Missouri was a little nervous about it because everybody Lewis knew was on the board of the magazine publishing company, the real estate company that made U-Heights, and the bank. So the bank went down, but E.G. kept going until he couldn't go anymore, and he left U-City in 1912 and went off to California and started the whole thing over again.
Did you have anything to do with the lions?
The lions were sculpted. I don't know why the lions were chosen in the first place. I'm sure a caller will tell us. They were sculpted by a man. Lewis had started the People's University, which was basically correspondence school. But if you were an art student and you did well, you would be invited to come. And that building now is part of the Lewis Center at U-City. At one time, it was U-City High School. You could study there. And he had put together a faculty you wouldn't believe. These were mostly, he and his wife were interested in pottery because they had found a good vein of clay on their house property. Leading, and I mean superstars, ceramicists and potters, and the whole thing only lasted about 18 months before Lewis went bankrupt. But it was the stuff that was made was museum quality. So he did. He was a visionary, and he did get things done. But he was kind of messy with money, and that in the end was he ended up spending some time in the penitentiary on the West Coast before he died.
His legacy, Joe, I guess, would have to be important to you as one means of drawing people to the area. I mean, some of these unusual buildings and unusual sculpture works are important to that community.
Oh, they are. I mean, visually, they most of them are still there. And City Hall, like Mary said, is a magnificent building inside and out. And it's always exciting when that searchlight gets turned on. It's infrequent, but it does happen still. And only one person knows how to do it, and I think he's about to train someone else so that the tradition can carry on. The former mayor of U-City, Nate Kaufman's son, is the one that now operates it. But it's an exciting area. I wish I could convey to you how exciting it is for people that send groups from other cities to study the Walk of Fame, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, how could we do that in our community? What made you decide to do the informational plaques and all? And then when they look at the different buildings and the different stores, they just beam and said, oh my gosh, I wish we had a street like this. So it really is coming together, and it benefits all of St. Louis because the reputation of having a street like this is good as far as travel writers wanting to come and talk about St. Louis. And, oh, St. Louis is not such a calm, dead Midwestern city. It's a vibrant community. And here's one neighborhood here, and then there are other neighborhoods too. I mean, I'm thrilled with all the neighborhoods that are coming back.
Now, you mentioned the Walk of Fame, and we're talking about the Searchlight and the Dome. There's a real Hollywood atmosphere to this. The Walk of Fame is like what we know in Hollywood in front of the old Grumman's Chinese Theater. And the light in the dome, it's where they used to announce that movies were premiering. So there is that element as well.
It's a great observation. I never thought of it that way.
That's right. We have a number of people who want to get into this conversation. Lots to talk about, but let's bring the listeners in. We'll start with Ann, who's calling from St. Charles. Go ahead, Ann.
Hi. Hey, I just want this is a great article, and I really look forward to reading that book. But I'm glad Joe Edwards is on here too. People don't appreciate that historic tax credits and low-income housing tax credits did a lot to revitalize the area and just make those incentives possible and make the desire for that redevelopment possible. And I think we ought to remember that when people try to criticize the use of them.
Well, that's a good point, and particularly the historic tax credits are really valuable, and not just for bigger cities like us, but for small towns all over Missouri. In fact, the national model is the Missouri model. Other states are adopting that model because it's so pure. You really have to do good work and really preserve the building in the correct way in order to get the credits. And it creates jobs and actually does bring in more money than goes out. So it's one of those rare incentive programs that actually does work.
Have you been able to take advantage of that in the work that you've done?
In a couple of smaller instances, I have. I just renovated a building next to the Tivoli building, just completed it this summer. And I could not have done that without those historic tax credits. Unfortunately, they weren't around when I renovated the Tivoli building, So it took me many years to finally pull it off in sections. But I'm still proud of the renovation.
You're not from University City. I think you were born in Clayton, did you say?
I was born and grew up in an apartment in the city for the first 4 years, then moved to Clayton and Polo Drive at Hanley and Wydon for my childhood days and high school, and then moved after college, went to Duke, and then moved back to North Taylor in the city of St. Louis. And then in 1975, I moved to U City. I'm right on the border between St. Louis and the city. One house is between me and the border, so I'm in the right place and close to work.
To quote an old Bud Schulberg book, the book was What Makes Sammy Run. Let me ask, what makes Joe Edwards run when it comes to University City? What got you going on all the development there?
I think just seeing a community coming back. I mean, I didn't plan on all this when I opened Blueberry Hill in 1972, but within a week I realized if I didn't work on the area, I wouldn't, Blueberry Hill wouldn't make it. So it was a long process of, A, banning the not-so-good people for life. I had a pretty strict policy on that, and so the outlaw people and the not-so-great people, the rude people, were weeded out over a period of time. Almost went out of business several times because of that, but it was definitely worth it, young enough at the time to risk it, and still do today. I mean, I still have that kind of attitude today. As the years went by, and little by little the Loop started coming back, and the Metrolink went in at the Delmar Loop stop, I think, in 93, I realized, wow, it's going to be so important for us to connect to that stop because it wasn't real close. It was close enough to walk to, but once you got past Eastgate or Skinker going east, it was really, as Mary said earlier, kind of no man's land and really run down. And the perception, and a correct one really, was it wasn't so great. So now we can tell people with the pageant and the Moonrise Hotel and Pi and Tavolo 5, a lot of new great restaurants and shops have opened. We can now tell visitors from out of town, oh, take the Metrolink from the airport, get off of the Delmar Loop stop and walk west. And they can do it and really enjoy it.
We're doing a program tomorrow on the 20th anniversary of the Metrolink, and I'm sure this sort of thing will come up. But in this case, the light rail, but earlier the trolley, really important to the development of that whole area and will continue to be.
Yes, indeed. As I've mentioned before, the U City was – the Loop was almost like the suburbs, and people were beginning to move from the city – even beyond U City. So it was a good idea, people thought, to have shops that might – that trolley passengers might want to use. And, of course, it grew up to be a very fancy, stylish place. and with two movie houses. I mean, it was really a place where people went to have dinner, go to the movies, shop, and that sort of thing. I remember when we moved to U City a month before Joe and Linda started Blueberry Hill. And if somebody asked you, you want to go out to dinner in the Loop, you had the Maryland Cafe and maybe Blueberry Hill, and that was it. And now it's mind-boggling. There are so many. The new trolley and the book, the latter part of the book traces the route that the trolley will take to the Missouri History Museum. The trolley is something that people can enjoy, and eventually I hope it will hook up to other trolley lines. There's talk about one going down Lindell too.
Yeah.
And people can get off and get on to in the Loop itself.
What's the status of the trolley, Joe? When does everything come together?
Well, we're checking off those last maybe 20 items on the Federal Transit Administration checklist right now. And they've been great to work with, but we just have to finish this off in the next couple of months, and then hopefully we'll be able to put it out for bid late this fall and have an announcement soon thereafter of what the schedule will be. But groundbreaking, there won't be any road work done until the spring because it doesn't make sense starting on it right in the middle of winter. But right after that, we'll start. And hopefully it'll be up and running, if not late next year, then real early, you know, spring the next year.
We did a program a couple of months ago on the proposed trolley line to downtown, down Lindell, that you just mentioned, Mary. And I was criticized because I called it a trolley. And it's no, I was rather sniffed, the nose in the air, said, no, it's a streetcar. And I said, this is St. Louis. So you're going to have to call it a streetcar, I guess, Joe.
Well, the loop trolley will always be called the Loop trolley. The other parts, I mean, it'll be a great prototype for other areas of St. Louis. I mean, I'd love to see it cut down on congestion and fumes in Forest Park eventually, where people wouldn't have to, you know, spend their Saturdays and Sundays in their cars idling while they tried to find parking. And then downtown, Central West End. And I mean, it could even go out to Clayton and go down Central, where it really would be a valuable transportation option for the tens of thousands of people that work in Clayton. Because right now the Metrolink is so far to the south, it's hard. But if it went down Central, it would change things.
But, you know, 17 million people a year are using that Metrolink. That's far more than anybody ever anticipated. So there is a need for this kind of transportation.
Well, there is. The future of cities in this country. Yeah. And Metrolink, it's a very well-run, very clean system. And it's the envy of other cities, really, because the numbers, like you said, are way above what the projections were.
Let's get back to the listeners. And I'll ask folks who want to call in to share your memories with us of the Loop area. And we'll do that part of it right now with Rich, who's calling from South City. Rich, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
Glad to be on again. I 40 years ago, I worked in a little pizzeria that was on the 6600 block of Del Mar, and at the time, you know, all these mom-and-pop stores that were along that block, at 5 o'clock, they just roll in the sidewalks, and all there was this pizzeria, which later was housed Riddle's Penultimate Cafe. There was the Streetside Records next door. There was the Tivoli across the street, and up the block was Blueberry Hill, and again across the street, there was a mom-and-pop convenience store and a laundromat, and after dark, that was it as far as the business went, and the streets were quiet. People were terrified, and 10 years later, I'm out of the Army and moved back to St. Louis, and things were really booming in the Loop. I mean, it was still a lot of transition. I had a friend who lived on Eastgate, and he had we'd come out of his apartment and head over to one of the bars, and we could hear some of the older kids indoctrinating the younger kids in gang warfare. But it was really quite amazing. But, you know, it's a testament to Joe Edwards of his determination to keep plugging away and revitalize this neighborhood. And I must put a shout-out. Got to have Chris Vondre's plaque on the Walk of Fame, and that's all I have to say today.
Chris Vondre, by the man who saved baseball. We did a program on a book about that gentleman and what he did 150 years ago to make baseball the game that it has become today. All righty. Well, thank you so much for the call. I'm going to bring in Jerry from O'Fallon now. While we're piling on Joe Edwards here, we'll ask Jerry to come into the conversation. Go ahead, Jerry. Well,
good morning. Thank you. I've been watching the evolution of the Loop since the mid-70s as a group of us. I go there a lot, but there's a group. We're there every day at Blueberry Hill the day after Thanksgiving. We've been doing that for over 30 years. But I just want to say I've been involved in economic development, et cetera, and several years ago, Mr. Edwards was very gracious, brought some people, the mayor and some other people. We all went down to Blueberry Hill for him to kind of brief us, essentially share his secrets with, in how we can manage development, say, of North Maine. And I found it very amazing, as long as I've watched this, not only the process that goes on behind it, the amount of detail, Mr. Edwards, that you keep in your head and the commitment. And it just brings, knowing what to do is the easy part, but still rather gracious of you to share that with us. But the hard part is in the execution, and that's where I really have to say, you have done just a tremendous job, and especially working with two city governments, it's tough enough to work with one. I think that we should have a statue of you up there right next to Chuck.
Well, thanks for the kind words. Thank you very much.
Before I take a break, Mary, how important is Joe Edwards to that community?
Well, he is called the mayor of the Loop. Very important because we people who live in the Loop, benefit from all that he has done. But it's so exciting to see what he's going to do. And when I moved into the Loop, my family moved into the Loop, it was a desert, just as Rich said. Mm-hmm. And it's not that way anymore. It gives you hope.
Well, Joe, I'll bet you feel a little uncomfortable when people are so nice and praise you for all the good things that you've done. I think you're that type of guy.
Well, thanks. I appreciate hearing it, but it is.
Yeah. Well,
thank you, though.
You're going to hear a lot more of it before your days are over. We have to take another break. We'll do that now, come back and take more calls, continue our discussion of the Loop, the history of the Loop and the future of the Loop as well. My guests in studio are Joe Edwards, from whom we've been hearing, and also Mary Costanton, author of the new book titled St. Louis's Del Mar Loop. And if you're someone who is into nostalgia in particular and a fan of the Loop, you'll want this book. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue our conversation on the Loop area, University City and the western part of St. Louis City. But before we continue that conversation, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Mine workers are protesting at Arch Coal today. Fast food workers are continuing their protest about their low pay. And Missouri House Speaker Tim Jones told our Politically Speaking podcast that Republicans would not try to override Governor Nixon's income tax veto. These stories and more later today and throughout the day on St. Louis Public Radio at sdlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Joe Edwards and Mary Costanton. And we're talking, obviously, about the Loop. Mary, one question I have for you. And you may not know the answer to this, but I've been curious about it. There's a picture in the book, an aerial picture, showing the old famous bar in Clayton and the parking lot, which is in University City. I had always heard that Famous wanted to locate in University City, but there was some problem in getting the city fathers to agree to that. So to show them, the May Company, to show them, put the parking lot in U City, which generates zero revenue, while Clayton got all the assets from the Famous Bar. Is that true?
I'm not sure that it was quite that way, but I think the stories I've heard are that the story I've heard is that U City didn't want all the traffic that a department store would bring, that it was supposed to be on the parking lot behind where Cicero's is, and that was just too much, and so the city fathers said, no, we don't want to have that. And whether Famous Bar put the parking lot in U City or not, I don't know. But it certainly was not a big help to U City. And that was – there are several photographs in the book that show how terrible the parking was. And at one point, the city had a parking lot with a sign that said, please park. You can park here. And when the trolleys went, which was in the middle 60s, that was really the end of U City as a wonderful place to go to shop if you didn't live nearby.
Let's go back to the phones. We'll bring in, pardon me, Harry calling from U City. Go ahead, Harry.
Hi. First of all, I'm enjoying this very much.
Great.
And the history I want to learn. My question's going to be about being a street musician on the Loop. And for a little qualification about who I am, I live on Hamilton, just at the east end of the Loop. And we bought a house down here. We're going to develop it. It's probably the worst house in the neighborhood, but we're going to get it better. And I went to Lincoln University, which I'm very multicultural. That's in Jeff City. And I went to UMSL. But I want to be I'm in a band. It's a really good band. We play at The Office, which is at the east end of the Loop, just the other day. And I actually have made a decision at 64 years old to be a street musician. I'm a good one. I play well. I play piano and sing every song in the world. Well, not every song in the world, but I want to be part of the development of the Loop. I've just recently moved here. I raised my first batch of kids in St. Louis, and then I'm back up here from Cape Girardeau, living here, and see the value of the Loop. And so my question is, can I play on the streets? I'll pay the $25. I think there's been a court decision recently about that. And can I entertain? And I actually, my guitar playing friend that I bought the building on Hamilton is got a master's degree. He's a great player. We do originals. I respect Joe for developing. I can't believe it's been since 72 that he's at Blueberry Hill. But
Harry, I'll tell you, I'm going to stop you. We get the point. We've got a lot of people waiting in line, but let's see if Joe can answer that question about the street musicians who raises kids by the batch, by the way. So that's that's a little different.
There are slightly different rules because we are dealing with two municipalities, the city of St. Louis and University City. So in the city, I think there is a permit. The city of St. Louis, there is a permit that you need to apply for. In U City, as long as the music is not amplified and you're in front of a place that is okay with you playing in front of them, then generally you can. What happens sometimes is people that aren't good musicians like you tend to play and say the same phrase, the same song over and over and over, where it kind of drives people batty. So we just have to arrive at that fine balance, because I think street musicians are exciting to have when they can actually play. So I look forward to hearing you.
Yeah, you can only hear "Yes, we have no bananas" so many times.
Right? Yes, we have no bananas. I can do that, Tom.
Harry, I'm sure you can. Thank you so much for the call, and good luck with your effort to perform in University City. Let's bring in Ed calling from the city of St. Louis. Go ahead, Ed.
Yes, I'm 63 years old, and for 16 years, I worked at the railroad that was downtown. And really, that was a long time ago. And one of my best friends at the railroad moved out to Laclede Town, where Harris Stowe is. And now he lives in University City. And my point is that things change. And there, somebody famous said, "Go west, young man." And really, the thing is, follow the money, because the money is coming back to downtown St. Louis, and you can see it. The money is coming back to downtown St. Louis, and it is. It is.
Ed, thanks for the call. Do you have a question to put at the end of that statement?
You know, that's the comment. You got
okay.
The moneyed interest is going to do what it wants to do, because you're not going out farther west. You're not going out to Ladue. You're not going to do that. You're coming back to the city where the money is at.
Right. And it is exciting, all the plans for downtown St. Louis, too.
I've often said that if city fathers want to get the kind of street action that you have in the Loop area and that we have in the Central West End, for instance, they ought to take Joe Edwards and have him walk around downtown and tell him what to do to make that happen. And I'm serious about that. I think with the ideas that you have, that would be useful to the city. Because the downtown, at certain times when the ball team is not in town, languishes a bit at night. And it needs to be perked up a little bit, don't you think?
I do. A number of years ago, I met with a bunch of people from downtown and had what at the time was kind of a wild suggestion anyway. I thought if the 30 or 31 Civic Progress companies would each buy two vacant downtown buildings and just renovate them and take a chance on them and then hope that they could fill the office space and the retail space on the first floor and also designate first floor as retail, restaurant, or gallery only to keep the human scale part of it. Then, I mean, can you imagine picking up the Post-Dispatch and saying 62 buildings are going to be renovated in downtown St. Louis in the next 2 or 3 years? And they might or might not have made money on them. It turns out if they had done it at the time, they would have actually. It would have been a moneymaker for their corporations and the best civic thing they could do. And then in the other neighborhoods, both north and south, if the second tier of businesses, the business council and all that, they're still big companies and they're tens of millions of dollars worth of companies. If they each bought maybe four small buildings on a corner in North St. Louis and South St. Louis and renovated those and then let neighborhood people open their small businesses in them, you'd have that same effect. And then St. Louis could just, you know, rise back up fairly quickly. It's harder than it sounds.
But oh, I mean, sure. Well, of course. But that was the corner property is really important, isn't it?
It really
in
is.
In any community, developing the corner and getting that anchor is very important.
It is.
Yeah.
Joe made a good point, too, which is applies to the Loop in the present day, and that is first floor should be retail. When Joe moved into the Loop, a lot of service businesses were on the first floor of buildings, and they would close their Venetian blinds, and it was dead space so far as somebody of interest to somebody walking along.
Yeah.
And so the group of young business people who came in at the same time that you did or you got together, I think, and lobbied the city to say, make it a rule that first floor was retail.
Yeah, the city actually worked on that just before that. I mean, during that time, and they were wise. They did three things, two which cost no money, and that was one of them, to zone just on Del Mar, not the rest of your city, but on Del Mar, that it had to be retail, restaurant, or gallery. And then another thing that did cost money was to widen the sidewalks and narrow the street to slow the traffic down, for one thing, but also to create the possibility of sidewalk cafes. And even though none opened right away, the street was narrowed and the sidewalks widened, and then they started to. And then the third one was to have occupancy inspections before a tenant could move in. And U-City was the first city in the country to do apartments, to do residential. And then it expanded to commercial, too, and that makes a big difference. And one last thing that I just remembered the other day when I was thinking about it, looking at your book, the legislation that in order to have a liquor license, you have to have 50% food, have a real kitchen. And that stops a lot of the fly-by-night people who really don't care about the neighborhood. And there are other parts of St. Louis where they come in and out. I mean, Gaslight Square saw the whole thing and happen, and they didn't protect it and went down pretty rapidly. So people, when they invest $100,000 in a kitchen or more, then they're going to protect it. They're not going to serve minors. They're going to, you know, run an orderly place because they have too much to lose. And that has really helped also. So four things, I guess.
Right. So it's complicated. Mary, what was your favorite thing you discovered in researching this book?
Oh, dear. There were many, many things. One thing, you were talking about the Searchlight before. On YouTube, there are actually two films, one from Living St. Louis, the other a wonderful amateur shot that shows Mayor Kaufman's son walking on the edge of the Searchlight and shining it on. The beam goes as far as the art museum, which is a big thing. But it was everything. I mean, it was just everything, all the things that were in the building where Fitz's is now. It mm-hmm. was a bank. It was the World Trade Center, mm-hmm. a different one. And how, as things got better, some of the names of the old stores, the Loop Package Liquor became the House of Liquors. That sort of thing. It's just, I love it. I mean, we live two blocks off the Loop, and my kids loved when we moved there, 9 and 11. They could walk to a store that's in the building now, the Blueberry Hill, to a place called Cantique and buy penny candy, which they weren't able to do in our other town.
And they can't do it today.
Very
well either. We have an email from Eric here. Says, can you ask Joe about how to improve the corner of Skinker and Del Mar to bridge the divide, and what's with the AT&T building?
Well, the AT&T building probably will stay the way it is. They have a lot of important equipment in there and switching station and DSL equipment and all. But in time, as the other corners are redeveloped, I think there's hope even there. The church's chicken on the corner just closed down, and that's boarded up now. And I think hopefully plans are underway to design a new building. I don't know if that's the case. It's not my property. I tried, but it didn't succeed in getting that particular one. But I think that the owners will do the right thing in the next year or two. So I'm real excited about that. But it does. You do have to really address that corner. And I'm most excited right now that a grocery store is coming back to the Loop, that to continue on the circle of history that Mary's book, you know, really shows us. And a grocery store, a global grocery store, is going to be moving in the new $80 million complex of the lofts of Washington University. They're building five buildings and a grocery store. And then I'm going to open a 24-hour diner called the Peacock Diner, the Peacock Loop Diner, about a year from now. And so we'll become a 24/7 thing. So you just keep looking for those things, the pieces in the puzzle to make a neighborhood great. And now that we have a hotel and concert venues and 24 clothing boutiques, it's better than going to the mall sometimes, folks. Come on down.
And it's more fun to walk from place to place, and they're different. They're not sterile like so many of these mall situations are. Time's getting away, but we have time for Dennis in Overland, I believe. Go ahead, Dennis. You're on the air, but please make it quick.
Yes. So I just wanted to say Harriet Woods. I know Joe early on when everything was going on, I think she was helpful.
She was very helpful, yeah. And she was one of the few left in on the council that really believed there might be a future. I know she tried hard to get O'Connell's to move to Jack Parker when he left Gaslight Square, and he didn't want to. Well, I'm not going to that street. And so she was kind of stuck with me. and it worked out. She took a chance on a young person and was instrumental in allowing it to happen. It took me 2 years to get a full liquor license, believe it or not. That's how cautious everybody was about development back then.
Well, when I think of Harriet Woods and how she got started, I mean, that career that she had, which was really quite remarkable, particularly for a woman at that particular time, what she has, and noisy, now I've forgotten what to call it, the manhole cover out in front of her house, and people used to drive over it, made a lot of noise. She complained, and the rest, as they say, is history. She got involved and took her case to court, if you will. Okay, we will try Phil in Baldwin. Phil, we'll take your call, but make it quick, please.
Hello.
Go ahead, quickly.
Instead of streetcars, could you please put monorails? The streetcars were first introduced back in the late 1800s. Please, this is the 21st century. Don't use our tax dollars for something. You want to bring people to the Loop? Put a monorail in there. You want to bring people to Forest Park? Put a monorail in there. We don't need no stupid thinking streetcars. We got Metrolink.
All right, Phil, thanks for the call. I wonder if he understands how much a monorail would cost to put anywhere.
No, and for his edification and others, too, the $25 million grant from the Federal Transit Administration has to be spent on this kind of transit, or else we'll go to another state. So we're very fortunate in St. Louis that we're one of only five cities that are getting those funds. And it makes sense. The cities that have done trolleys have succeeded very, very well. New Orleans has been adding them. They know whether it's wise to add them. And they are inexpensive compared to light rail or monorail. And you can connect neighborhoods to each other much easier.
A minute and a half left, and I have a question here about how people wind up on the Hall of Fame, the Walk of Fame. How does that happen?
Well, people can nominate anybody all year round. I made it a real open process. Then once a year, we send out a ballot with about 25 to 30 names on it to 120 people on a selection committee, all the chancellors of universities and heads of historic societies, arts organizations, and each living inductee receives one vote, too. And it's very difficult to get in because there's so many great categories represented. It's not just entertainment. There's science and education and sports and broadcasting, and et cetera. So there's several Nobel Prize winners still haven't made it yet.
You know, I'm happy to say that I'm on that list. I vote every year, and I always look forward to it. Only about 30 seconds left. Mary, you indicated that your favorite part of your book was the afterword. Why?
Well, it ties together. It begins with the wording on a plaque dedicated, a description of E.G. Lewis on a plaque at City Hall that was dedicated on the 100th anniversary of it. The second, there's another quotation, which is Joe in 2000 talking to the Business Journal about what is going to happen by 2025. And the third one is, believe it or not, Bill McClellan saying business people trust him because of his success. And he's a he's a hippie visionary businessman.
Well, we're grateful to have the hippie visionary businessman Joe Edwards with us in studio, and Mary Costanton, author of the book titled St. Louis's Delmar Loop, about which we've been talking. Thank you so much for being with us. Good luck with the book. Good luck with your projects, Joe. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, as Metrolink celebrates its 20th anniversary, we'll take a look at its past, present, and future, and we'll include the issue of development around Metrolink stops. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. The program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.